Just to remind you, if you don't know, every single Sefer Rashi begins with a love sign to the Jewish people. So, Bereishis, Bishvil Yisrael, Shenik Bereishis, Shmos, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, treats them like Kochavim. Vayikra is a little bit embedded. The beginning is more of a Kriyas Chiba for Moshe Rabbeinu. But then in Vayikra, towards the end, there's a Lamar. That Hashem tells Moshe, may all Moed Lamar tell them how much I love them, and because of them I'm speaking to you, and therefore during the 38 years that I won't speak with them, I'm not going to speak with you. That's not really the first Rashi. Bereishis is the first Rashi, basically. Yisrael Shenik Bereishis, or it's actually a Medrash, but to get the land territories all to whom Hashem wants, that's why Hashem writes Bereishis Bar Elokim. Shmos is the first Rashi. Bamidbar is the first Rashi. Hashem counts them again after all the and in Devarim as well. So Devarim is also a little bit camouflaged. So the first Rashi in Devarim writes, Moshe is going to give them a little bit of Musar. We'll see how Moshe gives Musar. Therefore, he didn't say it outright. He didn't give them frontal Musar. He alluded to it by talking about the places that he felt they had fallen into, or mutiny, or into some rebellion. So the Eva HaYardain, Bamidbar, Barava, Malsof, Bein Paran, Bein Tofel, V'Lavan, V'Chatzeros, V'Disaha, V'Chadasayom, Mechorev. So Moshe now, all the other Rashis were about HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shalom Yischiva Tam Yisrael. This is now the Sefer of Moshe, Mishneh Torah, that's written in Moshe's language, in a human language. So this is not time for not for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to display his Chiva for Am Yisrael, but for Moshe to display his Chiva for Am Yisrael. And despite all their history and all the water under the bridge and everything that Moshe had to put up with the Jewish people, he still has the love for them and tolerance, and he doesn't want to flash all of this tochacha in their face, as it were, in an overt and frontal manner. So he says it very subtly. He lists the places and the reasons that they failed, and he knows that they'll understand or they'll take it to heart. Now, he also teaches us, Vayhi ba'arbayim shana b'shteyasa chodesh bi'achad l'chodesh. This was now the 40th year, the 11th month, the first of the month. Yiber Moshe el b'nei Yisrael. Moshe speaks to them and, of course, gives them what it will be in the end, obviously, much more frontal tochacha, but it starts off very softly. Now, why is the Torah so elaborate in dating? 40th year, 11th month, first of the month. So Rashi says that the Torah is stressing that Moshe could have given all this tochacha. He had 38 years of nothing, a whole bunch of nothing. They weren't going anywhere. Everyone was just dying. When a great opportunity for Moshe to lambast them and say, I told you so, and this is the reason you're dying. Moshe kept his peace and kept his silence for 38 years, and only in the 40th year, the 11th month of the 40th year, the first day of the month, Moshe is about to pass. At this point, he's mochiach them. And Rashi says the reason you should wait for tochacha, in this case, wait until you're about to die, is because it's uncomfortable if you constantly reprove someone and constantly criticize them. So this way, this is Moshe's last shot. This is his final salvo. He's going to offer the criticism, but they don't have to feel there's going to be a continuing criticism. He's going to criticize him today and then say something tomorrow. So it teaches us that whenever you criticize someone, you shouldn't rub it in or prolong it. Right? Sometimes people criticize and the person responds, I'm sorry, or I'll try better, or whatever the response is. And the person offering the criticism with the annoyance just continues to like labor on it and discuss it and harbor their opinion, and it's not comfortable for the recipient. It's called graciousness of spirit. So Moshe doesn't want to continue to critique them or rebuke them, and he doesn't want them to think like he's going to continue. So he waits for the last possible moment, and that's why the Torah says, Vayhi, Babim Shana, Be'ashter Sechodesh, Be'achad Lachodesh, in order that he shouldn't be Mochicho V'chozer Mochicho. I also imagine, Rashi doesn't say this, but the reason Moshe waits is because he doesn't want to say something out of anger and frustration. You have to be very careful when you say something to someone, with tochacha or disappointment, or expressing your annoyance, or expressing your feelings. It shouldn't be said with anger. It should be said in a state of calm. I imagine during the 38 years, Moshe was very disappointed. He hadn't been speaking with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so I'm sorry, whatever confidence you get from speaking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he didn't possess for those 38 years. And I don't think he wanted to speak out of frustration. It's an incredibly heroic moment in Moshe's career that he waits 38 years to say something that's been on his chest. He's been holding in for 38 years. A, because he doesn't want to be a nag. He doesn't want to constantly rub it in and say it again, or at least give them the sense that he may be coming back the next day to say the same thing. And because he doesn't want to speak out of anger. So Moshe teaches us not just about tochacha when you're Moshe Rabbeinu, but about human relationships and interpersonal relationships. When you have something harsh to say to someone, say it once. If they apologize, they apologize. Don't belabor the point, as we're saying. Okay. Another interesting Rashi, speed Rashis today. We have a lot of Rashis to take a look at today. So, let's see. Right, so, excuse me. The Torah also describes that Moshe gave his tochacha acharei hakoso sichon melech amori asher yashev b'chashbon mizog melech bashan asher yashev b'ashteros bedrei. Moshe gave his tochacha only after he had succeeded in those battles. So why is that important? We know what time of the history it was. Why is it important that Moshe offers the tochacha only after he had defeated Sichon and Og? So Rashi says the same thing. If Rashi, I'll just paraphrase. Moshe reasons to himself that if he will offer tochacha before he offers some benefit of defeating these frightening kings, he'll say, like, what do you ever do for us? This man is coming and rebuking us and pontificating and preaching to us. But now Moshe had already serviced them and had victored in battle and had led to very grand military triumphs. And therefore he thinks he'll be more able to accept tochacha. So the lesson from this Rashi is not go defeat Og and Sichon before you give people tochacha. Go to war first and then you give tochacha. It means to try to have a relationship with someone, and within that relationship, it's easier for them to accept tochacha. You just show up out of nowhere, you have nothing to say to the person. And the first thing you say to them is, by the way, you're doing this wrong, you hurt my feelings, can you try this differently, whatever. It's generally better to, if you have a relationship with someone, a child and a parent, friends, spouses, obviously, so within the context of that relationship, sometimes, not always, sometimes relationships complicate the ability to give mussar, and sometimes an outsider has an easier job, because not as webbed and networked with all different types of emotions and hurt feelings. But in general, if your tochacha is in a vacuum, I mean, you just offer it without any context, without any relationship, it's going to be much more difficult for the person to receive it and to appreciate and to internalize it. So Moshe didn't just wait 38 years because he didn't want to be angry. He didn't just wait 38 years because he didn't want to be a nag and constantly harp upon the tochacha. Moshe waited because he wanted to be partially involved in conquering the land of Eretz Yisrael and fulfilling all those promises he had made to the people, so that there's a context to the relationship, even though he had to remember this is a new generation. So they really weren't that adult at the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim. They weren't so adult at the time of Kriyas Yamsuf. So they really hadn't seen Moshe's miracles, or at least the miracles that benefited them as adults. So that's why the conquests of Sichon and Og are so formative in their relationship with Moshe. Now they're receiving the same type of direct benefit from Moshe that their parents did, and within this context, it's more likely they'll listen to Moshe Rabbeinu rather than tochacha in a vacuum. So these are some of the issues that Rashi raises about how we offer insight, constructive criticism, positive reinforcement, whatever we want to tell. Obviously, conversations in life can't always be peachy, and you're great, and I'm great, we all get along. Sometimes there are hard conversations to have with people, which you have to convey your needs and your emotions and your feelings and rebuke people sometimes for things that they did to you and critique them for things you think they should be doing better. You have to be very, very careful about how often you say it, whether you accept their response quickly or whether you continue to hurt their feelings by repeating your critique, and not to say it out of anger, and to say it in ways that are subtle rather than direct, much as alluding to the places. And also that ideally it should come from a relationship of love and trust and reciprocity, where that person knows you're not just grinding them, you know, have an axe to grind, you're not just dismissing them and belittling them, but there's a larger context to the rebuke and to the criticism that makes it easier for them to accept. Okay, Moshe complains to Hashem at a certain point, and he says he loves the Jewish people. Hashem elokechem hirba eschem v'inchem ayam kechochvei ha-shamayim l'rav. I know a Balkri who read that today. Hashem elokechem v'osechem yosef elechem kechem elef pamim v'orach eschem. Sounds like Moshe is startled by the supernatural growth of the Jewish people. You're now assuming your supernatural role. Kechochvei ha-shamayim l'rav. Hashem has led to exponential growth, and you were in the desert, and you still didn't lose your population. So Moshe realizes that Am Yisrael is a miraculous nation because they're privileged to supernatural providence, supernatural miracles. And then he says, Eicha esel avadi tarchachem emasachem v'rivchem. How can I carry all this burdens and arguments and disputes? So Rashi tells us what each thing is. Tarchachem, he says, you're very litigious. You're always going to court. You're always suing everyone. You're always prosecuting and indicting. So, and therefore I have to handle the tarchachem. Masachem means you're very cynical. and Rashi actually uses the word apikoros to describe cynicism. We typically use the word apikoros in a theological context. Someone that's a heretic expresses heresy about theological truths. But Rashi uses the word apikoros here to refer to their cynicism. They saw Moshe coming out early. Oh, he's probably leaving early for this reason. They saw him coming out late from his house. Oh, he's probably leaving for that reason. They weren't theologically heretical. They were just cynical about Moshe's leadership. So evidently, Rashi believes that there's an overlap between cynicism and heresy. And very often, people that are cynical about human beings, about other people, or about themselves, or about ideas, will likely be cynical about the system of beliefs, and that will lead them to Epicurus. Not every Epicurus is someone that's this great theologian who spends 20 years thinking about God and the meaning of evil and the creation of the world and comes to the conclusion there's no God. Very often, it's just people that don't have the ability to believe. Cynicism is the inability to accept things. You always have to break things down because it doesn't make sense to you. It's the inability to accept things on faith, to accept articles of faith. So they were cynical about Moshe, and therefore they're called an apikoros, and we use the word apikoros to describe people that are cynical about their system of faith. But either way, Moshe is complaining to Hashem, they're litigious, they're cynical, and verivchem, tarchachem umasachem verivchem. It's not clear what rivchem is. Rashi uses the word roganim. They cry, they complain, they sing. Not clear what Rashi means. There's a lot of different girsos. But either way, Moshe is delineating all the issues that we know very well about Jews. They're litigious. They're rude. They are sometimes very cynical about one another. And we're seeing this, unfortunately, played out in our country today. But what's fascinating is that this pasuk is juxtaposed to the previous pasuk, where Moshe says, my gosh, you guys are growing exponentially because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is supercharging that population growth. Namely, Jews are the people of Hashem. When you're the people of Hashem, especially when you live in Hashem, you become very strong people, strong will, strong opinions. So even if you don't live in Israel, you're studying Hashem's Torah all day, you're davening to Hashem, you're receiving Hashem's Hashgacha. So of course you're going to have strong opinions. Of course you're going to be ksheirov. Of course you're going to be obstinate. Of course you're going to be stubborn. Of course you're going to think you're right. Of course, that's how Hashem created us. So our stubbornness and our litigiousness and our obstinacy and our cynicism and challenges sometimes, they're not just incidental. They're because we are the people of Hashem, and because of, we're the people of Hashem. So Moshe juxtaposes Hashem, Elokei Avosechem, Yosef Elechem Kachem, Elef Pamim, the fact that you're growing so phenomenally and exponentially, you're the people of Hashem. And since you're the people of Hashem, so you're going to be very thorny and ornery. You're not going to be just patsies who lay down and accept everything as an article of faith. Okay? If you want to wait a second, we'll stop here.
So one more Rashi. I had actually planned to discuss it in my Rashi shiur, but it was a very rushed shiur, and I was looking at my phone. Someone needed me, and it was already too long, but I wanted to include this Rashi and append it to the Rashi shiur. It's the age of AI. A lot of people are thinking about creativity. What is creativity? How we endow creativity? It's something I personally think about a lot. I've thought about a lot even before the advent of AI. And there's a really fascinating Rashi about creativity. When Moshe Rabbeinu repeats the episode, the story of his appointing Sanhedrin members, Dayanim, and he says, Havu lechem anashim chachamim unevonim viduim l'shiftechem. So there's, again, that list of three different types of knowledge or three different types of information. And we have different listings. Chachma bina das, chachma tvuno das. Here it's chachamim, nivonim, v'yiduim. So the yiduim is probably not about knowledge and creativity. It's about how familiar they were, their reputation, the level of social respect. But you do have this couplet of chachamim and nivonim. Now, we would typically believe that chacham is someone of knowledge, wisdom even, and a navon is someone who's creative. So there's really very little specificity. You're drilling down to what creativity is. It's just a dichotomy. Some people just amass knowledge and acquire knowledge and study knowledge and absorb knowledge and remember knowledge, and some people create knowledge, and it doesn't really tell us how to be creative. And of course, this is a couplet that's well known to us. Afilu kolenu chachamim, kolenu nivonim, kolenu yodim es Torah, whatever the language is, and I don't have it in front of me. I'm very tired this morning, but the Haggadah in Avot Hamayin with Arbi Mitzrayim. But Rashi actually quotes a conversation between Arios and Rabbi Yossi. I didn't have time to check who Arios was. Fascinating. He sounds like he was someone in interest. No Rabbi Yossi, but had a name that sounded like Rabbi Yossi. Arios and Rabbi Yossi had a conversation. I'm not sure if this Arios, I'd have to look it up, and maybe a listener who's listening to this will know and can send me an email or something or look it up on Wiki. I just haven't had a chance this week. I've been very busy. Ma ben chachamim l'nevonim. What's the difference between a chacham and a navon? And the assumption is they're both creative thinkers, because if one were just a master of knowledge and one were a creative thinker, you wouldn't be asking the question. So Rabbi Yossi gave him a parable. He says, a chacham is like a money changer. Remember, those days money changers were not just people who cashed checks, but the coins had different levels of quality and from different countries. It wasn't uniform. So money changers were people who literally could convert poor coins into better coins, non-local coins into local coins. And so there are two types of money changers or money handlers. One is someone who's responsive, okay? When the people bring him money to assess and to evaluate, he sees it. And when he doesn't, Yoshe Vitoha. He sits there and he's silent and he's just, he ponders life. Navon, what's the difference between a Navon and a Chacham, with the assumption is that a Navon is superior. Domi l'shulchani tagar, a more professional shulchani. Kishimivin l'mos liros ros, and when they bring him monies and coins, he of course assesses and evaluates and analyzes. But when they don't, then he looks for other coins and other opportunities, and he's able to find other coins to assess and to evaluate. So what's fascinating is that Rashi is quoting Rabbi Yossi, who creates two different levels of creativity. And the higher level of creativity is not just someone who's responsive, but who's an initiator. And part of initiating creativity is to be curious, but part of it is to have an initiating mind and not a responsive mind, or you could say, it's a harsh way of saying it, a lazy mind. You can't call someone who's creative a lazy mind, but it's not as active and not as initiative as someone who's a navon. And I think, let's say, to put this, because I think a lot of people listening to this probably have learned Gemara and have learned Gemara be'ion analytically, let me describe it to you as follows. Sometimes you're learning a sugya, and there's a question, classic question, a question in Tosfos, a question in Pnei Yehoshua, a question in B'Kiv Eger. So the question forces you to analyze and to create distinctions and to create categorizations to solve the riddle, to solve the question. And what happens when you come to a topic or a sugya where there are no glaring or overt questions? So you move on, you read it. But that sugya doesn't deserve less analysis. There are deeper mysteries in that sugya. There are deeper ideas. So even though you're not being prompted by a question, you still want to understand, as we would say, the nature, the category, the logic behind that halacha. And you see, what happened is in the history of Talmud Torah is that Tosfos popularized questions and answers as the, we call it, Socratic method of trying to analyze. The Tosfos wanted us to see Shas holistically. So the way he forced us to see Shas holistically is don't just read the page you're on, but compare it to other pages and find the overlap, and in many cases, the clash that overlap contains, and then try to solve it. But what happens was Tosfos' approach was so popular that it became the methodology of learning Shas. And there are so many questions and answers that were proposed throughout the generations that when there aren't questions and answers, for example, Gemara's, I'm learning brachos now. There are very few rishonim with certain sugyos in brachos. Kachim, taras, so it's harder for people to crack through the surface and get down, drill down to the logical core. And I think part of what Brisk did is it equipped us with tools, and it didn't use questions and answers primarily as the only tool for analysis, but it took a more global, structural, how to understand the topic of get, how do you understand the topic of Kenyan? How do you understand the topic of brachos? These globalized definitions of broad areas of halacha. And the questions are one way, but not the only way, to get to those definitions. So that even when you don't have questions, because you don't have that many rishonim, where there's no overt contradiction, you can initiate an analysis of the structure of a particular sugya or a particular halacha, and not just response. Sometimes when people ask me to describe this, I tell people, everyone today learns brisk Torah. 80% of the people learn Talmudic analysis in the brisk style that Reb Chaim popularized. But for many people, it's firefighters. They're putting out fires. There's a stira here, so let's solve the stira through brisker analysis, through brisker logic, through categorical distinction. There, even though it seems like there's a clash between the way we read Megillah, let's say, and the way the person reads the Psukim of Chalitza, but the definition of how we read Megillah, that category of reading Megillah, is different than how we read let's say, the Psukim of Chalitza, and therefore there'd be distinctions of language, distinctions of how you read them. But some people are trying, and I try to do this in my teaching and my learning, not just to solve a problem here, to solve a problem there, but to build these larger, I say, not just firefighters, but city planners, to build these large cities. What is Chalitza? What is Ged? What is Kedisha? What is Kenyan? And obviously, I believe that this is a closer reading of Hashem's Ratzon, because Hashem didn't give us details. Hashem, his logic is integrated. Hashem thinks in broad terms, not just in details. The details, of course, stem from the broad terms. But anyway, it's really fascinating, Rashi, the money changer who is responsive and the money changer who is initiative, who looks for ideas, who's curious, rather than just waiting for money, or in this case, ideas to be posed to him, which he's forced to analyze to self. Anyway, it's an interesting point. Sorry, I was so lengthy. Shabbat Shalom.